Ring-a-ling, hear them sing, it's Christmas time in the city. LSU and Tulane got a lot of early Christmas presents on early signing day for college football. And your Saints brought the Saints fans a little early Christmas present with a win over those dreaded Dirty Bird Falcons. We'll talk about it coming right up on a Christmas edition of Fazan on Football. And welcome to this week's edition of Fazan on Football. Mike Fazan here. I'm going to talk a little bit about recruiting. There are no college games to talk about, but there is a lot going on in the college football world, as this week was the early signing date for National Letter of Intent football players. So, we'll start off with Tulane, who, to me, their two biggest recruits or their two biggest signings already happened when they were able to retain Coach Fritz as head coach. And then they found out that Michael Pratt, the quarterback who flirted with transferring maybe to the SEC or another big-time conference, actually decided he is going to remain at Tulane for one more season. So great news there. But as far as signees coming out of high school, listen, Tulane, you know, the class ranking, you got to throw that out the window when you're talking about Tulane. You're not going to get the 5-4-star recruits. You might get one every once in a while who just grew up in New Orleans and loves Tulane. But other than that, you pretty much have to battle your other schools, your UL Lafayette, your McNeese State, your Southeasterns, your, you know, schools of that nature to get the recruits that were not signed by the big-time conference schools. And there's a lot of players out there. Remember, I'm going to give you a name. Peanut Tillman went to University of Louisiana Lafayette, coming out of, the Chicago area in high school. Obviously, didn't get a lot of attention coming out of high school. Chose Tulane. I'm sure, listen, right there, he's in the middle of Notre Dame country, Ohio State, Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin. All of those schools could have had him. None of them wanted him. He went to ULL, and all he did was play 4 years at ULL, get drafted, and become a Hall of Fame defensive back. So just because you don't have 5 stars next to your name does not mean that you're not a good player or you won't be a good player. And this is what Tulane does. And this season, they hit on a lot of their guys coming in. They recruited more nationally. They do have a lot of local, but they got a quarterback from California, DBs from Texas, which is always good. Got some linemen. Got a big-time lineman transfer from LSU, Cam Wire, to Tulane. He'll step in and start. And a couple of other transfers. So, all in all, a good class by Coach Fritz for Tulane. They can build on the success they had this season. The conference gets a little more favorable as far as competition next season as they lose Cincinnati, Houston, and Central Florida to other conferences. I think all going to the Big 12, but don't quote me on that. And those teams are being replaced by schools, I think Coastal Carolina, which is a good program, UT San Antonio, and I'm drawing a blank from the other one. But anyway, it's going to be a conference that should be doable for a Tulane going forth. I mean, they should be a major player in this conference. And if the conference champion, if they keep the tie-in to the Cotton Bowl for the conference champion, you could be seeing Tulane going to Dallas on a pretty regularly, not yearly basis, but every couple seasons, which is great news. So great job by Coach Fritz and the guys at Tulane. They brought in a really good class for what they had to accomplish. And like I said, the two biggest things they did was retain Fritz and get Michael Pratt to stay. All right, be right back. Talk about LSU's class. And welcome back to Fasano Football. Normally, I wouldn't have to talk about college teams right now, but now there's a thing called Early Signing Day, National Letter of Intent, Early Signing Day, which has happened this week. So I will continue with the Tigers signing class, which I thought was great. I thought Brian Kelly, in just his first full season of recruiting, now remember, he came in cold around this time of year last season. I think maybe a week before signing day, maybe two. That's just not enough time to gain ground. And so whoever you lost then, there was no getting them back. But this season he's had a whole year. He and his staff has had a whole year to dig in, get relationships going, cultivate relationships. Remember, you're recruiting kids nowadays, not just their senior year. So Brian Kelly came in. A lot of the guys who were seniors this year have already been recruited by other schools, the four or five stars, for two or three seasons. So they're still behind the eight ball. I mean, these guys start getting recruited, at the camps. I mean, you see it. They have commitment. LSU has commitments from the 24 class, which means they were sophomores when Kelly took over, and juniors this year and seniors next year. So when Kelly took over, these guys were juniors. They had already been recruited by multiple schools, and probably Notre Dame as well when he was the coach at Notre Dame. And so he had those relationships established, but now he's representing, a different school, obviously. So, great class for LSU, as high as five, as low as six. I mean, look, when you have a coach that can develop talent the way Brian Kelly does, that's all you need, baby. That's all you need. Give me a top 10 class every year. You give me top five every year, it's even better. But just give me that class, and you will see great things from a Brian Kelly coach team in the SEC. I'm not even going to worry about the guys they missed. There was a DB from California who was an LSU commit. I think ended up committing to Oregon, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe he stayed. I'm not sure. Maybe he stayed at USC. But that was a tough. It's always a tough one to get from California. And then I think a kid, a linebacker from Manny, Louisiana. I think went to A&M. And then the big one out of IMG Academy chose Alabama at the last minute. And during his announcement, he kind of misspoke where he said, "I just called coach and said I'm ready to come play." Huh. Really? Really? Well, we all know what happened. He got paid. And, he went to the highest bidder. And that's what some of them are going to do. There's nothing you can do about that. And I respect Brian Kelly for saying, "I'm not getting in a bidding war over an 18-year-old, 17, 18-year-old kid. I'm not going to do it." Kid that young with that kind of cash, and I hear it's up to $500,000. No way, no how are they coachable ever again. Ever again. They're not the same player that they were the second before they signed that deal. And they are, at best, a tough coach. At worst, you're kicking them off your team midway through the season. I mean, ask A&M. They had numerous suspensions last year. Freshmen who signed these big contracts, who came in thinking they were the bee's knees. They are entitled to automatic starting position because, you signed them, you gave me all this money. I must be great. So, good. Those kind of players, I don't really sweat losing. And to be honest, I saw a couple of tapes of him at 7-on-7s, and he needs a lot of work. He's got good size and speed, and he's got measurables. He's long, he He's tall. He's fast. But he needs raw. He needs a lot of work in his technique. So, good for him. Good for Bama. Nick Saban, you know, the guy moaning and groaning last season about Jimbo Fisher buying the number one recruiting class, goes out and does the same thing this year. So you just got to play the game if that's how you want to do it. And I'm on Kelly's side where, listen, if I need to pay you this much money for you to give me the grace to come on my team, it's not worth it. And I said it before last season. I said it last season when A&M signed his million-dollar class. And I'll say it again. Freshmen should not be allowed NIL deals. You need to earn something before you get the big money. Even then. Now, you could say, well, look how great I did in high school. It put me in a position to get you an ideal from a high school team. It's a whole different ball game when you go from the high school level to the SEC level. You see it all over the map. Deion Sanders said it. These kids are not the same. The worst thing they ever could have done was start paying these kids this kind of money. And NIL was not supposed to be $500,000 bonuses. It was supposed to be enough change to where you don't have to worry about eating or taking a girl out on a date or driving a nice car during the season. Wasn't supposed to make you a millionaire, but that's how it's turned out. And fine. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. Something's gonna happen in the next couple of years to where they're gonna regulate and rein this thing in. It's just getting out of control. In the transfer portal, they did just make some adjustments, but you know, this is the college football right now, and this is the game you have to play. But Brian Kelly's not playing. He'll play it to an extent. But he's not getting into a bidding war, and I agree with him 100%. Especially when you look at the fact that on the same day, the defensive back that chose Alabama, I mean, LSU came out with the announcement that they signed a transfer, a five-star defensive back that was on Texas A&M's team last season. Now, he was suspended, but according to everybody you read, they did their diligence and vetted him. And it turns out the suspension was because he was doing donuts in the parking lot in his car. So, whatever. But Denver Harris is legit. He was starting as a freshman in the Texas A&M's backfield. And he was on his way to becoming a freshman All-American when that happened. So, he is the real deal. And so, you lose one, you gain one. Everything else in the class, I mean, wide receivers, give me a break. Give me a break. The kid from Miami runs like a 4.3. Sampson is his name. From Catholic High, 6'4", with a huge wingspan and fast. Parker. I mean, God, Lord. And then you get, he got a couple of DBs. Anyway, he got the kid from Nevada. He got the kid from Texas, who everyone's raving about. Number one defensive back in Texas, a cornerback, or maybe a safety, but he can play corner. And he did get a couple of safeties. He got some big-time offensive linemen, defensive linemen, a couple of good running backs, and a big-time quarterback. I mean, his Christmas wish list, I mean, just about checked all the boxes. All the boxes. And I can tell in his demeanor on signing day in his press conference, he wasn't worried one bit about whether the DB from IMG was signing or not. Because he said, we're still not finished yet. And they're not. They're still going to bring in some transfers. So they're number six. They're anywhere from five to seven now. Now, there's still the regular national signing day out there in February, the first Wednesday in February. And this class, depending on what happens, this class could get even higher ranked. So, year one, Brian Kelly recruiting class, I give it an A. And next season, it's just going to get better. So keep it rolling, Brian Kelly. You'll keep LSU rolling. All right, be right back. And we're going to talk about an actual game that was played. The Saints and them Dirty Birds from Georgia. Well, 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 the Saints. We know one thing about this year's edition of the New Orleans Saints. They can beat the Falcons. They can beat Atlanta Falcons, which in a bad season, you kind of take that as a Saints fan. Well, at least we swept the Falcons. Because you can't be a Saints fan and not absolutely loathe those dirty-ass birds. So, wasn't all that unexpected. Look, Atlanta's a bad team. Every team in the South is a bad team. From Tampa down to the Saints. And you can use excuses. You can come up with injuries. I'll go through them. Tampa's old. Tampa's got an old quarterback who's an absolute legend, who is in the final stages of his career, and he just don't know it yet. He doesn't know it. And so they are stuck with a guy who is perceived by just a casual fan of leading them to the Super Bowl, where he was actually led to the Super Bowl by his defense. But, you know, his name is Tom Brady, so they're going to say, oh, Tom Brady, oh, look how good he is. The defense stopped Kansas City and, you know, whatever. You know the story. Anyway, Carolina's a dumpster fire that they normally are. You know, they even fired their coach, and they're Carolina fired their coach and cut their quarterback. They're right there in the running. And Atlanta's Atlanta. You know, Atlanta's going to be Atlanta until they hire their version of Sean Payton. And it hasn't happened yet. They kind of had it a few years ago when they made it to the Super Bowl with Dan Quinn. And before that, with Dan Reeves. We all know what happened in the Dan Quinn Super Bowl, the famous or the infamous 28-3 game. And then the Super Bowl before that, they just played Denver, and Denver was a juggernaut back then. John Elway's, I guess it was John Elway's final game in his illustrious career. So, and then the Saints. The Saints are an old team. They're a declining team, a descending team, with a coach who just feels stale already. Dennis Allen, I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he's like I said in my previous podcast, he's an excellent coordinator. He's an excellent X's and O's guys. But if you go back after that Atlanta win last week, last Sunday, you go back and look at they had the Saints, and I'm a season ticket holder, so I get the emails. They sent a video of his post-game victory speech. And I'm telling you, he could not inspire. There's an old expression we used to say growing up. He couldn't lead a whore to bed. And that's pretty much Allen. He's just not a inspirational person. He's not the dry kind of fumbles on his words. You know, I don't put a lot of stock in those post-game speeches anyway. They're off the cuff. Coaches are trying to define the moment. They're trying to come up with something profound. You know, John Harbaugh's like that. You know, he's trying to make it so dramatic. You know, he pulls out an imaginary sword or whatever. I mean, these guys are so silly, man. It's insane. The mentality of that type of athlete or coach is really childish when you think about it. But it works to some degree. Listen, you can walk in after win and just light the room up with a big old giant fart, and the team's going to cheer. They just won. They just won. You can say anything. You guys, y'all did it today. You answered, he puts a phone. Y'all answered the call We had a call, and you answered it. And one thing you said, which kind of a no-no with coaches, is he said, we have four, we got one. So he's already, instead of saying, it's probably a little thing, maybe I'm just being hyper, technical or whatever, just to make a point, but coaches always drill. I remember Jim Moore used to say the most important game of the year is the next one. I don't care about four games. Do we have to win four? No, we have to win this one. But he said, hey, Allen said, well, we have four. Now that's one. Let's go get another one. No, let's just win. And I've always thought, and Nick Saban said this, it's his mantra, and Brian Kelly's mantra as well. Let's just win the next play, okay? I don't care about the game. I don't care about the score. You beat your man on the next play. Everything else will work out. So as far as the game went, it started out great for the Saints, jump up 14-0. And in Saints fashion, they're going in and ready to put this game away in the second quarter. And on a third and one, you don't see Taysom Hill or Alvin Kamara. You see some guy they just picked up off the street at running back. And they're handing the ball off to him. See, this is what drives you crazy about this year's edition of the Saints. They don't make any sense. So either that or they're outthinking themselves. So either Carmichael's thinking, well, it's third and one, so obviously they think we're going to bring in Taysom Hill and Alvin Kamara, so we're going to trick them. We're going to keep Andy Dalton in, and we're going to bring in this running back we just picked up off the street, who's a veteran, and we're going to hand the ball off to him. And it worked, except the guy fumbled. I mean, they got the first down, and the play worked, but the guy fumbled. So I guess you can't blame Carmichael for that, but it's just typical Saints. And then so that kind of changed momentum. Atlanta's like, okay, Saints don't want to win this thing. They want to give it back to us. They want to give us this game. So let's go out and take it. So what should have been a blowout win for the Saints turned into a nail biter because they don't know how to do it anymore. They forgot how to win and close out teams. I mean, time after time in that game, you had chances to put them away and you didn't. And also, what happened to the Saints' run defense, which for years was one of the best in the NFL? I mean, that was a thing. You couldn't run on a Saint. For about 3 or 4 years, you could not run on a Saint. Now it's like the gates have opened. Like the secret's out. We all know what to do to run against the Saints. And it's working. I mean, Atlanta just plowed them. And it wasn't just Atlanta. Teams have been plowing them week after week on the ground. Baltimore, ridiculous. San Francisco, even though they play well against San Francisco. I hate to see what happens when they go to Philly. Ooh. Oof. But you have to give them credit. They held on. They won. They got a big, giant turnover to clinch the game, which is something the Saints have been lacking all season. They've been the ones who've been giving the ball away at crucial moments. So it is what it is. The Saints are now 5-9. I guess they have a 4% chance to make the playoffs. I mean, this season's over. I mean, as far as making the playoffs. I mean, you know, if you're a player, you kid yourself to keep yourself motivated. I guess if you're a fan, like that kind of a fan, you say, well, hey, we still have a chance. You have no chance. You have no chance. You got to go to Cleveland in Antarctic-type weather. And then you got to go to Philly. I'm thinking they do play Philly. 5-9 is 14, so there's 3 games left. So, yeah, they go to Atlanta, and they go to They go to Cleveland, Philly, and then they finish out against Carolina. This season's over. You're going to lose your next two probably. And then by the end of the season, it's a game that doesn't matter. So who cares anyway? So the only chance you have, Saints, is you beat Jack Frost and the Cleveland Browns Saturday. Philly clinches this weekend, number one seed. They have nothing to play for, so they rest all their starters against you the following week, which gives you a legit chance. And then you beat Carolina in the last game. Now, you have to hope that Tampa loses to Arizona, loses two of the next three. Because they're six, you're 5-9, they're 6-8. That would make them 7-10, and you 8-9. Because you have to have a better record. You have to win out. You just saying. And so, now, Tampa losing two out of the next three is possible because Atlanta and Carolina are still in this thing. They haven't given up on the season yet. They're saying the same things to themselves that Saints fans and Saints players are saying. We still have a chance. And as long as there's a chance out there, I'm not going to give up. So in that sense, it's doable. I mean, you can talk yourself into the Saints still having a chance to make the playoffs a legit chance. Because, like I just said, everything that needs to happen is plausible. It could happen. It could happen. So I guess there's a glimmer of hope on this day before Christmas Eve that the Saints could still make the playoffs, win the division, make the playoffs, host the first round playoff game, believe it or not, and which would probably be the Dallas Cowboys. And listen, Dallas's track record in the playoffs is blundering, to say the least. Well, Dallas always finds a way to lose in the playoffs. So wouldn't that be crazy? What a Christmas miracle. What a Christmas miracle. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! We'll see. All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Fasano on Football. I would say the final... No, I have one more edition before the year's over. But I want to take this chance right now to wish everyone out there a very Merry Christmas. I hope all your wishes and dreams come true. And happy holidays for those who celebrate other things besides Christmas. Just a great time of year. Okay, we'll talk again soon. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you.